Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for joining me. Hope you guys all had a great 4th of July weekend, long weekend, a lot of people with time off. If you missed last week's episode because you were enjoying the 4th, we had Joe Buck from Fox Sports on, so you can check that out in the archives. 2 weeks ago, Seth Rollins from the WWE was tremendous on the SI Media Podcast, and 3 weeks ago, Scott Van Pelt from ESPN as well. All good interviews, Joe Buck, Seth Rollins, Scott Van Pelt from the past 3 weeks. So dip into the archives if you missed any of those. Give us a download, a review, rate it, all those good things. On this week's show, we have Ramona Shelburne from ESPN to talk about all of the NBA free agent madness, the Paul George trade to the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard recruiting him. Ramona wrote a great story on ESPN.com about that. And we get into the whole reporting and how reporters get it wrong, how reporters get it right, how you break news. Ramona really goes into good details, how she found out about the Paul George trade and issues she's had with Kawhi Leonard and his camp and how that made her job a little bit tough over the past couple of weeks. So it was really good stuff there. So we won't waste any more time, and we'll get right now to Ramona Shelburne of ESPN. All right, joining me now, ESPN senior writer, also you see her all over ESPN TV on all the NBA shows, Ramona Shelburne. Ramona, how are you?
What's going on?
Are you recovered yet from free agency, or you're still need some rest?
You know what? I think I am. I mean, there's no such thing as recovery, right? Because like it's just the NBA season is just, you know, it's still going, right? It's
right.
Kind of like this endless summer, and you can't really relax, but I felt like after Kawhi Leonard chose to go to the Clippers and the Paul George trade went through, like the need for me to sleep with the phone right next to my face,
right,
and you know, went away, right? Like I could probably like, you know, sleep a little longer and not sweat every text message that came in, or felt like I had to get up at, you know, and be texting people at 5 a.m. and just checking in. Like I sort of like reflexively wake up, which is, you know, normal, I guess, because I have a little 9-month-old baby too. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, between like text messages on free agency and him waking up, he mostly sleeps through the night now, but it's between those two things. It's like kind of in this constant state of hypervigilance.
So. And of course the Kawhi thing happened at 2 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. So, so much
for me, it was 11. It was fine. Like I was out here in LA and like, you know, I kind of had a sense starting about 8 o'clock that night. So I want to say like 2 or 3 hours earlier, I had gotten a call from somebody saying the Clippers were trying really hard to get a second star. And it was just, we were in the business of trying to confirm that for the last couple hours. Right. Yeah, so I had a sense this was coming, and frankly, I was just kind of relieved because, like, once that was done, I was, you know, able to, like, I think I stayed up the whole night and wrote, but like at least that was off the board. It's always better when you have clarity.
Well, you wrote that great piece, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this week, about how Kawhi sort of got Paul George to come with him to the Clippers. But before we get into all the specifics and the players and KD and all that, I am curious a little bit about the reporting end of it, because this was a wild, wild free agency season with so many big names on the board. And I'm just curious, when the stakes are as high as they were the past few weeks, you know, it's such a cliche and sort of tired phrase since Twitter's been around, but there's a lot of people who are more interested in being first than being right. And then you have the people who want to be right and aren't as concerned about being first. And we saw a lot of wild reporting. When the stakes are this high the past couple weeks, are you extra careful? I mean, you're always going to be careful reporting news as a journalist, but is it ever difficult to not get caught up in trying to put something out there? How does that whole process go?
I mean, you know how many like hits I had to do, or like as a reporter, I mean, I'm literally, my job is to give you information and I don't have any. That's terrible. That sucks. Right. And for several days, all I can do is give you context. I can give you kind of what I'm hearing, but a lot of the stuff I was hearing, I mean, like to be fair, and I think I've said this on air, is, you know, I don't get to guess. I don't get to predict. I don't get to, you know, speculate on where he might go based on you know, six little hot little rumors that I was trying to chase down every night. I mean, there was, you know, I had heard the idea of Kawhi talking to Paul George. I'd heard about it earlier in the week, but for me to report that, for me, Ramona Shelburne, who works for ESPN, to like put a story out there, that takes two or three sourcing, two or three confirmations. And we actually had heard about Kawhi recruiting Kevin Durant before free agency started, and I needed Adrian Wojnarowski to help me confirm it. I mean, I was like, you know, you don't go with something like that based on third-hand knowledge or third-hand source, because I don't get to be wrong, right? Like, you don't get to say, you know, well, this is right?
You can
say, here's what I think is happening.
Well, you can be wrong. You just put your credibility on the line.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is like, as a reporter, like, it's like against your DNA to be able to have to say, I really don't know.
Right.
But the truth is, I really didn't know. I mean, none of us really knew. We were seeing all the same tea leaves, and we would hear stuff behind the scenes. But, I mean, if you'd see our text message chains, you know, me and Woj and Windhorse and Zach Lowe, and we're all talking all the time. And it was like, you know, every night it was some new team that seemed like they were in the lead.
Right.
And it was the reason why it was so hard is that Kawhi Leonard kept his circle so tight. And the teams involved who you would normally get information from or were basically sworn to secrecy if they wanted to still have a chance at him. And there was just like this understanding that amongst those teams that if any information about their meetings with him leaked, that it would hurt their chances, that he would see as a failure of trust. And so that's out. And then Kawhi Leonard has a really tight circle, and you know, none of us specifically were close. And I, you know, I'll point this out, and I don't mind talking about it, but I had done a story on Kawhi Leonard, a pretty extensive story the year before when everything was falling apart in San Antonio, where I really had to get into his business and to his circle. And I, you know, I got to know all the people in his circle, and then I wrote what I thought was a very fair and balanced story. But in their view, or at least they didn't want to deal with me specifically after that, and not like I betrayed anything, but I, you know, sometimes the truth doesn't always sit well, right? And your version of the truth doesn't sit well, and they weren't interested in really playing a part in that. And you know, some of the things I wrote were probably not fun for them to read, you know, about his agent Mitch Frankel, who had some financial issues and had to partner up with a whole different set of financial advisors in New York. And that's not fun to read about yourself, right? Uncle Dennis Robertson, who is Kawhi's main advisor and who's very close, like, you know, he's not a popular person around the league, especially not with the Spurs, right? So it's not fun to read that, although all I can do as a reporter is talk to everyone and report both sides and give everyone a chance to respond, which I felt like I did. I felt like it was fair, but, you know, you make this, there's a gamble that you have, right? You write that kind of story, and then later on, if people don't want to get into the transactional stuff with you, yeah, that's the price you pay.
Yeah.
But I do have a lot of context, and so I can report the context.
So it was difficult for you then to get Kawhi information over the past few weeks because of what you wrote last year, or were you still able to use?
Yeah. And I think that's fair. But it wasn't difficult to get Kawhi information. It was difficult to get it from the two or three people in Kawhi's camp who would be divulging that information. So, and I think it was difficult for everyone, right? Like, not many reporters have a relationship with Mitch Frankel or Dennis Robertson, just a few. And I think it was fairly obvious. And just the way everyone reported on that story, there wasn't a lot of information coming out of his camp.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about this, and I don't want to put you in an awkward position to talk about people on other networks, so, I mean, I'll sort of say what I want to say, and then you can handle it, but I don't consider Chris Carter a reporter in any way, shape, or form, but he was going out there with all this Kawhi information that people thought was accurate because, I guess, they have the same agent or same something. They have some connection. And then,
but he said on air he has the same agent. Mitch Frankel was his agent when he was a football player. So that's sort of publicly out there. He's acknowledged that. But, you know, I also try not to guess at other reporters' sources in the sense, and not because I think I don't think it's fair to do, but two, oftentimes people are wrong. Like, you know, a lot of times people try to guess at my sources, and I always laugh because, like, they just assume things and they know who you've written stories on. But a lot of times it's not what you think. And it's also just like, you have to understand, like what you say, he's not typically regarded as an NBA insider. He's a Hall of Fame NFL player. He's I think he does a pretty good job on the show with Nick Wright. And it was fine. I mean, it was, you know, that he was going with the information he had. And I think you take it for what it is. You know that the standard that he would have to report something is going to be different than the standard that I would have. And that's not right to say anything badly about him, but it's not written. It's not, it's different when you say it than when you write it. Okay. It's different when you, are seen as an NBA insider whose job, like, we can't go with one source, right? You have to go with two or three or four sources.
Right.
As much as you can, you have to get both sides. So I don't, you know, it doesn't mean that anything, I don't actually think anything that was reported by Chris or, some of the people who were getting information from Kawhi's camp was wrong.
Well, that was
I really don't.
That was where
I think the stuff that was wrong was the internet stuff.
Right. Well, but that's sort of where I was going is,
yeah,
with Carter having the same agent as Kawhi, mm-hmm. how you're in this, you're in it deep. How much of it is agents using reporters? How often does that happen? Does that happen a lot, a little bit? Does it happen at all? Because to me, it looks like something, if you have the same agent and you're coming out with this information that's completely wrong, I don't think it's unfair to think maybe you're being used for leverage in some way or shape. We don't know if it happened in this specific case, but is the possibility of that, would you say, is strong, not strong?
I think so, but I don't know if you can necessarily even assume that he was getting everything from Mitch Frankel.
Right.
He's acknowledged even in some of his tweets that he had a relationship with Dennis Robertson and other people in Kawhi's camp. So it could have been that. And if you look at the effect of it, because I think Chris Carter, Chris Broussard, who else was saying the Lakers were in the lead. There was another reporter, I can't remember.
Well, Chris Broussard said
it was Lakers for a while. Yeah. But all of their statements were fairly well hedged. And so I think that's what's hard about a free agency like this, is that we get in position where we have to report what somebody's thinking, but it's always sourced, and then you kind of get hung out to dry if they change their mind or if something else happens. And I don't know that anybody was. I don't think Chris Broussard or Chris Carter or any of the reporters who or people on who were talking about this story, I don't know that they were wrong. I think they were really talking to somebody and they really had information there. I just don't think anybody was reporting on the prospect of Paul George.
Right.
And I think that because they have a different, like, I probably would have gone with it if I had something really strong straight from that, you know, Kawhi's camp. But I would have hedged maybe a little bit differently, but it's hard because, like, it changed, right?
He
recruited Paul George and then they had to pull off that trade. I mean, things changed. And that's why I think it's always so important to remember in free agency that we report minute by minute, but things can change in a second.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of my point with, because Chris Broussard tweeted the Clippers are out, and then he signs with the Clippers.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you recover. For me personally, I mean, I think most fans don't care. We're sort of in it, so we come at it from a different perspective. For me, that's a hard one to recover from.
Yeah, you know, he did a really good job, though, in putting out a video of owning it, right? Like, you know, same thing. Jalen Rose said 99% Toronto. I mean, it's a good thing he gave him the 1%, right? But that's why it's really hard, because we have a daily ecosystem of shows that wants information. They're ravenous for it. And it's like, literally your job is to opine and give and give opinions. But there's a difference between opinion and reporting. And I think that's what this story got. That's where the story got really complicated, tricky for everybody involved. And I hate to do this, because I think it's like giving people a platform that are just looking for a platform and trying to get attention. But there was, I mean, do you remember the day that Kawhi to the Lakers was trending on Twitter because some random Reddit poster
yes.
who people think was Jeannie Buss's nephew and totally wasn't, by the way.
Like
reported it very strongly. And then there's some kid at USC who, you know, has just been going strong with information. I mean, there's like four or five like Twitter and Reddit reporters who were going strong with information. People's like desire to believe anyone and everyone who claims to have information that was just fascinating to me. It was literally trending in the United States, Kawhi to the Lakers.
Yeah.
Because some Reddit guy.
But I think that's also part. I think people enjoy the sort of irony of a guy on Reddit trying to break that story. So I think that helps get it trending too, because
Well, I'll tell you this.
It's humorous.
It's people, but there's people in the league who were like wondering if these people actually had information. Like, I know that a lot of
right.
teams, agents, et cetera, like started kind of looking into who these people were. Like, they got attention. And I don't know what that says about us as a society, but I hope it means that we're all more willing to go back to traditional reporting and just say and be like, it's okay to say I don't know. It's okay to say,
right,
you know, here's what I can tell you.
Well, like
everyone
you said,
involved who would give us this information is trying not to.
Yeah, but like you said, now with so many TV shows, so many networks out there, mm-hmm. people doing shows on the internet, I don't know how you go back. I agree with you, it'd be nice to go back. I don't know how you do it now because there's just so many. Like you said, everyone gets paid now to opine, basically, so it's hard to do that because of the way the media is. I'm curious, though, we're talking about how everyone was guessing and people didn't know what was going on and there was all these leaks and all this stuff, but you wrote the great story on ESPN.com after Kawhi and Paul George went to the Clippers. The story you wrote was titled How Kawhi Pulled Paul George Away from OKC. If you haven't read it, check it out. And meanwhile, that was kept, like, Kawhi recruiting Paul George somehow didn't leak and was kept a secret until it became public. How did that not get leaked? Is it because Kawhi's camp is so tight?
I can tell you pretty directly that I heard about this, I want to say it was like Tuesday night, and it was like a third-hand kind of thing. And to write something like that, the burden of being able to report, I mean, you can't report a third hand source. You right. just can't. You right. have to go straight to either Kawhi Leonard. You have to go straight to somebody close to him who would know. You have to go straight to somebody close to Paul George, which of course we did. And all of those people denied it. All of those people said they hadn't heard that. Right. And which is their right. They can deny it. They can, you know, and I don't trade in the business of, hey, I heard about this from a third-hand source, and these people all denied it. Like, that's, you know, because now it's just, that's not how you report
right,
a story.
Right.
Like, all the aggregators, everything will just run with the story of, like, hey, Kawhi recruited Paul. I honestly, until the Clippers made that final push to go get him, I wasn't sure if it was right. I mean, I heard 17 things like that throughout this, right? So there was a lot of stuff that you heard and you were trying to vet, but everybody involved. And I think it makes sense, right, that Paul George and the Thunder and all this, that would have been kept as quiet as it would have, you know, that was so hard to get that information out of them and confirm, because they have a vested interest in denying that.
Right.
Okay? They, you know, and people do that. They shoo you away. I don't like it when they do that. And there's a way of doing it where you can not be helpful, but you also don't lie. So
yeah.
I would say it was more like that. People were not helpful, but they also didn't specifically lie about it.
So,
okay, so when you go back and you read exactly how they answered your question, it was like, oh, okay. I guess you could say you haven't heard. but you know, you just can't, like, so I think a couple of us were aware of that possibility, but there was also 17 other things
right.
that we were, you know, trying to chase down, and like, it's just irresponsible to report unless you can get confirmations, and everybody's, you know, they don't have to confirm it for you. I mean, unless you can find, but you know, you try three or four other people, but it's really hard.
So just out of curiosity, how did you, one of the top reporters in the country, NBA, how did you find out, and when did you find out this was actually going down?
You mean that the trade was really going to happen?
Yeah, like Paul George was traded.
I had heard about this possibility of, you know, Kawhi and Paul George talking to each other. I want to say it was like Tuesday night, but like then it was the same day he had met with the Lakers. And again, we couldn't even confirm that these meetings happened. Do you know what I mean? Like nobody would even confirm
right.
that we heard that the meeting was Monday night with the Clippers, and we heard it was at Doc's house, but nobody who was in that room and was in position to confirm it would. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff that was out there, but it was just like, in other words, really hard to confirm in the traditional journalistic way. And so, you know, I don't know what you do with that. I think you just have to stick to your standards and you just report what you feel comfortable and what you actually can confirm. So that was like Tuesday night, maybe. Then he flew to Toronto on Wednesday. Thursday was the 4th. And then I think by Friday evening, I heard something like pretty late mm-hmm. that it's again, very, you know, third hand kind of source that the Clippers were trying to pull something together, but it was like late. Like I want to say it was 8 o'clock at night, Friday night Pacific. So the trade finally comes out around 11.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, Woj was all over it. Obviously, right. You know, Woj, I usually check in with him and, he was all over it and had it, you know, like nailed, right. Just absolutely had it nailed. And
right.
You have to, that's why he's just the best, right?
So
he's really plugged in and he's really good at just being all over it because, you know, like I say, there's a lot of stuff that you're just constantly chasing down. And when you, if I told you the 17 other things that we heard,
right.
that were not true, then you'd have a better sense of it, right?
So
when it finally does happen, you're like, oh yeah, okay, so yeah, we knew about that, but we didn't. Did we know?
Right.
No. You know about 17 other things that weren't true. It's only when it finally comes together. And it was so late. It was Friday at 8 p.m. And then I think I was on the phone trying to confirm it for a couple hours. And then finally, you know how it actually started? Kawhi's sister, who runs his official Kawhi Leonard fan page,
mm-hmm.
just Instagrammed a picture of like the Clipper logo.
Right.
Right? Like, I think that's actually how it
all right, 'cause that's
first started leaking around. It was a little before 11 o'clock Pacific. And then I saw Chris Haynes had a tweet saying he's decided he's gonna pick Clippers. Was almost instantaneously with her Instagram post, and then very shortly afterwards, I think Chris Carter had something, and then Woj had that he had told the other two teams, and then a minute later had the whole Paul George trade, which is pretty incredible. So I was just kind of, I remember just sitting there going like, I knew something was going on, but just. You get stonewalled. People don't have to tell you stuff,
right? Of
right?
course.
And they can lie to you at the, especially when things get hot and heavy, you know. I wouldn't necessarily say lie. They just don't respond, right?
Right.
Or
right.
they respond something that kind of throws you off. it happened, but I was able to move pretty quickly. Like I want to say 11 o'clock, I got on the phone with 5 to 10 people between 11 p.m. and. Let's say close to 1 a.m. Pacific. And then I had to turn the story real fast. And I think I filed by 4 a.m. So it was like
not bad.
An hour and a half, 2 hours on the phone.
Yeah.
And then 3 hours of writing, filed it, did like a phone interview with like the early morning Sports Center. And then talked to my editor and just caught a couple hours of sleep afterwards.
So when Woj is going to put out
a fun night,
when Woj is going to put out that tweet about the Paul George trade, does he like send out a text to you? You know, you mentioned you and Zach Lowe and Windhorse, or do you find out via Twitter? He won't give that to you guys. Is it like a heads up? This is coming.
I think I saw the tweet first.
Okay.
I mean, things move really fast. You don't have time to like tell everybody,
right,
you know?
Right.
And I think I saw the tweet, but like I said, I had some idea of what was brewing just based on my own sourcing.
All right. This episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/approach. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but ZipRecruiter does not stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/approach. That's ZipRecruiter.com/APPROACH, ZipRecruiter.com/approach. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. What I'm curious, I want to get into a couple of other things outside of what's happened with free agency, but there are a couple of interesting sort of ripple effects from this, and I'd love your take on it. I feel like I could be wrong. Tell me if you think I'm off base on this, but it does seem like there is a, what's the word I'm looking for? It might be strong to say this. I'll say it's probably a little stronger than I mean. But I feel like the vultures are out for the decline of LeBron James. We saw it a little bit last year because the Lakers were a complete mess.
Yeah.
And now you're getting all these things. You know, Kawhi didn't want to play with LeBron, and this says something about LeBron. The guy averaged 28 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists last year, and people just act like, you know, he had this crappy season. What would you expect from LeBron this coming season with Anthony Davis there and now Danny Green?
I mean, I think he's been noticeably quiet.
Yeah.
I mean, usually with LeBron, you would see him interjecting himself into several big conversations of the day, and he really hasn't.
Right.
I thought that was, pretty noticeable, and I think he's. I mean, I know he's busy. He's filming Space Jam out here in LA, and he's, you know, hanging out with his kids. So, like, what you see on social media is always kind of a window into LeBron. Mm-hmm. But this first year, he got a lot of criticism, and I'm with you on that. I think people have just, you know, been circling the decline for several years, and then he—I mean, they were doing that the last year in Cleveland, right? Even the last 2 years, and then he just had this unbelievable playoff run. It's like, oh yeah, LeBron's still the greatest. And it's like, you know what? Let's just let things play out, right? Like, let's just watch the man play and appreciate what an incredible basketball player is, and how I think it's incredible that he's maintained this form and this stature in the game up into he's gonna be 35,
right?
You know? You don't usually see that, especially for a guy who entered the league after high school.
And then you factor in all the playoff appearances. It's like he's played almost 20 seasons, you know, 25 seasons.
Yeah, it really
seasons.
Is. Yeah. I mean, and I covered the Kobe Bryant decline, right? So I've lived through that very recently. And I think this one's going to be a lot different, actually, because Kobe was here with the Lakers where it's kind of like it's like a marriage, right? Like he was Derek Jeter to the Yankees. Like, and it's okay when he wasn't that good or he couldn't do the things that he used to do because he was still Kobe and he had won 5 rings here. LeBron doesn't have that equity built up in LA, and he didn't really earn much of it last year because the team did so poorly. You know, it was seen as him, you know, he contributed to at least some of the strange chemistry issues with this Anthony Davis talk in the middle of the year, right? And I think there's a couple of things that he did wrong right off the bat that he's going to have to, you know, bounce back from, which was, you know, that, I know this is like silly, but that fake pizza, that, you know, the thing with the pizza place out here where a lot of fans lined up wanting to see him at the Blaze Pizza. And there was a tweet that kind of made it seem like he was going to show up and then he didn't show up.
Right.
Like people didn't like that. And he didn't do a press conference when he first got to LA. There was a video of him walking into Staples Center with a, you know, glass of wine. Like, just wasn't a good look,
right?
You know, and I think he's savvy enough to realize that. I've noticed him doing a few things this off season I thought were really smart. He showed up at Frank Vogel's press conference and just made sure everybody saw him, that he was there, and hasn't rocked the boat at all on anything. And like, I thought that was really mature. Like he was literally wearing like a neon outfit. So like, notice me, I am here at Frank Vogel's press conference. I'm not mad about the Tyronn Lue thing. You know, I mean, it was just really good optics. I thought that was really smart. And I thought it was really smart that he stayed quiet. So I think he's been working really hard from the indications that I've gotten from, you know, people around his circle that he's working hard and he's going to come back, you know, trying to have, you know, a year for like the revenge kind of year. Right. And at least, you know, he's got Anthony Davis to run with and play with, and it's going to be a great pairing. But, you know, he never really embraced Los Angeles his first year. Like, he was here and he was making movies, but the optics of everything he did were off.
Yeah.
And they didn't win. And so it just made it all that much worse. But a couple things have happened since the season were over. Like, Magic Johnson just, I mean, you know, he went from being a beloved civic icon to like, oh, somebody take the phone away from Magic, right?
Right.
Is that the vibe in LA
with Lakers?
Really hurt the franchise.
Is that the vibe out there in Los Angeles with Lakers fans? Like, are they down on Magic in LA, the diehard Laker fan well? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, the guy is still always going to be beloved here. He's Magic Johnson. He's Showtime Lakers. Like, if he walked into Staples Center on opening night and wanted to sit courtside and talk to the crowd, like, they would let him. Like, that's how beloved he is. But I think it wasn't a great look for him, the way he stepped down, and then the the stuff he said about the organization. It wasn't a great look. And then he has this way of tweeting.
Yes.
Really funny, right?
That's an understatement.
And I would say that his long-term clout is always going to be the same, but in the short term, like, his credibility has taken a bit of a hit. And
right.
so I that was probably good for LeBron. Right,
like
at the end of the year was LeBron in the line of fire, and everybody's sort of like taken their spot in the line of fire. First it was LeBron, and then it was Rich Paul, then it was Jeannie Buss, and it was Rob Pelinka, and then it was Magic Johnson. Like,
right.
like everybody's had the everybody out here has seen a lot of criticism,
yeah.
and they got Anthony Davis, and I think that's theoretically the way they turn things around, and that's what they were saying to us the whole time, which is, we're not going to say anything until we win, because that's really the only answer right. they can have.
Well, that's what I didn't get about the take saying about, Kawhi clearly didn't want to play with LeBron. This is an indictment on LeBron when he just recruited Anthony Davis. So I thought that was a bizarre narrative that was out there with some people. But there is a vibe. I get the vibe that there's the LeBron decline on the court, which I don't think we've seen at all. But there's also this, like, I don't know if people are tired of him or they want a new sort of regime. Or I feel like there's a little too much disrespect for LeBron James. That's just my opinion.
I've always felt like that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a man who has carried the NBA.
Oh yeah.
And been the standard bearer and been the face of the league willingly. And thoughtfully and in a really compelling way where he takes just everybody's best shot all the time for the past 16 years.
Yep.
I guess. I mean, I don't think you people get enough credit for just taking on the circus that is around him, right? I mean, like, Kawhi Leonard actively shuns the circus, but part of the job, part of being the face of the league is dealing with it, is promoting the league, is, and I just think LeBron has handled it almost better than any athlete I've ever seen.
Like, I agree.
Kobe was pretty darn good at it too, but he didn't have the first part of his career. There was no social media. There's no Twitter.
Right.
There's no Facebook. Can you imagine Shaq and Kobe with Twitter?
Well, I don't want to even bring it up or get
in.
I don't want to bring it up or get into it, but Kobe was very lucky. Social media wasn't around for a certain part of his career.
Right. And yeah. I think, like, there's been no superstar who has had his career covered as deeply or picked apart as LeBron. Like,
without
look how well LeBron handles this compared to, let's say, Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving or even, I would say, Kawhi Leonard. I mean, just because Kawhi doesn't talk doesn't mean he gets a free pass on this.
Right.
I mean, it's...
And also,
he speaks on the court, yeah.
And because of social media, yeah.
Part of your job is to promote the league.
Right. And not to mention the charity work he's done, sending kids to college, opening up schools, and then people focus on the fact that, he has an Instagram story where he's, drinking wine and, wearing some weird outfit. I mean, it to me, the guy shouldn't be criticized, period, on, off the court, but that's a whole other issue.
Here's the thing. I'll say this, too, and I think this is something that I've learned over the last year or two. Okay, so I used to, I have two Facebook accounts. One is a personal account,
right.
and one is a professional account. And my professional one, I mostly just like tweet my, put my stories that I write and occasionally some tweets and things like that. And the personal one is supposed to be just like, my friends and family and, some work colleagues and whatever. But, the Instagram has always had traditionally been a personal thing for me. Like, mm-hmm. you just kind of keep your personal stuff. And I just, when I had my son last year, I started opening, I'm sorry, Instagram had always been a professional thing. I could take pictures from games and take pictures from things. And then now I think it's turned into much more of a personal thing. And I've opened that door up, and I know a lot of us women in the industry, like, decide if we want to put pictures of our kids or pictures of our personal life, our husbands or whatever. And, cause you do open yourself and people get to know you as a person and off, away from your job. I mean, I'll go on my Instagram account sometimes and there's people like, saying really nasty things about me, like the things they would tweet at me, like in a comment that I posted on a baby picture.
It's crazy.
Like, come on, man.
Yeah,
crazy. But it's like LeBron has done that almost the whole way. Like, he's invited the world into his life.
Yep.
And that's a I don't know. I think that's a really brave thing to do. I mean, I can't imagine the comments he gets on pictures that he does for like Taco Tuesday, right? Or him on vacation. But he's also like trying to remind you that he's like a real person. And he's not just LeBron James. He's LeBron James with a family, with a wife, with a mom, with like friends. And he goes to, here's his workouts. And it's like, I don't know. I think it's pretty brave. I think it's to be admired, because I know what it feels like when you put yourself out there in a way that you haven't before.
Right.
And I think we'll appreciate him a lot more. Once
absolutely.
He's gone.
And a man with a ton of pressure on his shoulders in terms of being a role model. And, you know, the entire city of Cleveland looked up to it's a much deeper thing than he's just a basketball player. But I'm curious, since you're out there in L.A., me personally, I think the Kyrie KD thing with the Nets, I think will probably not end well and get very ugly, because I just think those guys and the New York media are not going to mesh at all, especially Kyrie, because if you go hide after a loss, it's not, you know, people think it's the Nets and not the Knicks, but it's still the New York media, and the Nets are going to get more coverage than the Knicks this year probably. Do you see any potential problems?
The potential
there?
For disaster there is high, right?
Yes.
it's high. I mean, you just like literally like, you know, I don't want to make fun of the New York media. I think it's always been turned up a notch in New York, right?
Right.
And I think other places, quite frankly, are pretty soft. Okay, so it makes New York seem a lot rougher.
Yep.
But that is kind of your job. It's just a matter of like, you know, you have to, I think the same rules for media apply no matter where you are, which is, and this is what I always encourage people to do, like, just talk like a person, okay? Just talk to the media like you're a person and they're a person, because too much of what happens with, and this is where things go off the rails in New York, is like a lot of times it's just people are get baited into clickbait, or they get baited into a negative storyline, but it's also because they don't have like real relationships where you can like talk and be honest with each other. And so then there's this skepticism and this questioning, and it doesn't need to be there if you just had a real honest conversation. And I think it's a larger issue for media in general, which is just like, we've just got like when I first came into the business, like you had all that. There just wasn't so many damn people all the time. Right.
There wasn't,
the locker room was like, you used to have one-on-one relationships. I always remember, I was talking to Lamar Odom. I was like a real little, young reporter in my early 20s. And I was asking him some like, what was a hard question? It was just like, whatever it was, like Phil Jackson said, you sucked. I don't know. Okay. Something like that. And I was kind of beating around the bush. Like I think I asked like two kind of softball-y type questions. And then I came with like the, hey, did you hear what Phil said about you kind of thing?
Right.
And Lamar turned and he goes, you know, it was just me and him. It wasn't like a group or anything. It was just me and him. And he goes, hey, you know what? Just if you got a hard question to ask, don't just come with it. Like, you don't have to like butter me up first.
Right.
You don't have to like, you know, have that whole, you know, prelude or I know what Phil said. Just ask me the question.
Yeah. I like that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah.
You know, that's good. And I just like, that doesn't happen these days.
Right.
You know what I mean? That doesn't happen now, because there's just too many people in there that don't have experience, that don't know how to talk to people, that don't know how to talk to athletes. Too much skepticism. So, I don't know how it's going to go with KD and Kyrie in New York.
Yeah. Well, and in the case,
I don't have high hopes in terms of the media situation with those two.
Right.
But I would say if we could all just learn to talk to each other again, we would be in a much better place.
Well, the thing about those two guys too is it's not just a media thing. I mean, KD fights with like high school kids on Instagram. You're going to get eviscerated in New York if you do that. And Kyrie Irving, I should know who wrote that. I think it was Jackie McMullen who wrote the story up. I'm not 1,000% sure. I think it was Jackie, about, you know, after the season ends, the Celtics ask Kyrie to sign basketballs for some charity, for some, you know.
Yeah.
And he says no. That's, now listen, I know Boston is a tough media market. That story comes out in New York. He is going to get absolutely destroyed. It's not going to be pretty. So, you know, it's not just a media thing. They got,
you know,
weird
like
personalities.
Like, I mean, look, Boston's a tough media market too. They have like, you know, you got Jackie McMullen. She's not afraid of anybody, because she's going to ask real stuff. And I just think like we need to do a better job of understanding and getting back to what the traditional journalist athlete relationship was. And, you know, it's our job to ask questions. It's our job to hold you accountable, to explain yourself, et cetera.
Right.
But it's also your job to like learn how to explain yourself. And I think that we're not doing a good job of preparing players for like understanding it. Like, you know, nowadays it just seems like you're a hater if you ask something negative. I'm like, no, I mean,
right.
You're not a hater. We're just asking a question, and we can actually have a conversation about it if, you know, we could create those conditions. But what happens is everything is social media. Like, I've even felt it. I mean, I this year, I can't even tell you how many stories I've had where something I said gets misaggregated. I mean, I was on the jump, you know, a couple weeks ago and said something about, you know, the, you know, if the Lakers should have made this a priority to change the date the trade went through so they would have max cap space, and now they have to. And I was reacting to the story that Woj had written about them scrambling to find a trade. And somehow I got aggregated to saying the Lakers didn't understand it and they had an accounting error. I'm like, I listened to myself again. I never said accounting error. Right. I never said they didn't understand. I just said they didn't make it a priority, and they should have.
Right.
But it became reality because it got aggregated that way. And then six other places aggregated it. And then it was like, it's not even what I said. It's like, I get where the players come from on that. That's really frustrating.
Yeah.
And you should have seen my mentions after that. I was like, I gotta stop checking my mentions. My God.
Yeah.
Like, I already corrected the record once or twice. I tweeted somebody back and said, that's not what I said. Just listen to the video. But it didn't matter. And so, like, I totally get where the players are coming from. If anything, I felt it. Right. So, yeah. like I feel bad for them. And I just hope we can all get back to a place where, like, we have real human conversations. That's just somehow, some way. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but, you know, in the world we live in. But
yeah, I don't know about that one.
That's my frustration. Yeah. It really wasn't that long ago that we did.
All right. If you have 1 second, very quickly, non-basketball, because I'm a big WWE guy. I know you're tight with Ronda Rousey. Do you think we'll see her in the WWE ever again?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I just don't know when.
Okay.
I think she's going to come back. I think she might even come back in a non-traditional kind of way.
Okay.
Like, she might come back as a character, but not actually wrestle, because I know she wants to have a family, and, you know, I don't know how many kids or what the timeline is. I'm
right.
not exactly getting that deep into that type of reporting.
Right.
I still talk to Ronda, but I feel like that's a bit of an invasion on that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I do think that she still wants to be involved in WWE, and it just might be a different way. And one thing I would say is, like, I don't know if we've covered this enough or talked about this enough, but, like, as somebody who just went through this with ESPN and in my own career, like, I just think the way the WWE handled this is awesome. Like, to show that you, like, as one of their top female stars, you spent a year and a half building, can then now go off on maternity leave and nobody's asking questions or making her feel bad, and your job's waiting for you if and when you want to come back. Like, that's just how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not that surprising that they would be this good about it,
right,
considering Stephanie McMahon went through this herself, and you know, just write it into the story.
Right. Well, that's exactly
write
that's
it into the
right.
script, man.
It's a perfect awesome. Thing to write into the script. Exactly. I thank you for coming on. I enjoy this thoroughly, and try to get some rest and relax now that after Westbrook gets traded, you can chill out for a little bit.
Yeah, totally. All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. All right, my thanks to Ramona Shelburne. I enjoyed that chat a lot. Good stuff there on reporting and everything that goes into it. As I told you at the top, Joe Buck on last week, if you missed it, while celebrating the 4th of July weekend. 2 weeks ago, Seth Rollins was on the SI Media podcast. 3 weeks ago, Scott Van Pelt was our guest. So go into the archives, give those a listen if you did not yet do so. And as always, please, if this is your first time listening, subscribe, rate, review. It helps tremendously. And we'll see you next week right here on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.